is I want to continue our theme that we have drawn for this year from 1 Chronicles 28:9. You'll remember with me in 1 Chronicles 28:9 that David was instructing his son Solomon before his death to seek, to know, and to serve God. And we've had various efforts of trying to accomplish this theme this year. Our classes have looked at various themes here. The home study especially has tried to come to the question of who is God. And on a monthly basis, we've tried to answer some of these questions about the nature of our God. And once a month, I'm trying to examine an aspect of this. In January, we looked at the idea of seeking, recognizing that we only seek God with the heart. And that's how we truly seek Him, by turning our desires and affections and mental capacities and spiritual longings toward God. In the month of February, we recognized that the only way for us to seek God is if we first have self-control. And we must be able to control ourselves before we begin to seek God. In March, we recognize that ultimately we are only able to seek God because He first sought us, contrasting the story of Babel in Genesis 11 with the story of Abraham in Genesis 12. April, we recognize that ultimately we should seek God because God wants to be sought. God has longed to be sought by His creation ever since the days of the Old Testament, and He still longs for us to seek us, for us to seek Him. In May, we were too busy with the sermon schedule. I didn't have time to look at knowing. So this first Sunday of June, we're going to take our focus away from seeking God, use many of those principles we established, but now really seek to answer the question, what does it mean to know God? And that's the question I really want us to examine this evening. What does it mean to know God? I know Jessica. She knows me far better than any of you do. What does it mean, though, to know God? Whenever we look at this concept of knowing God, it's one of the foundational scriptural concepts of our relationship to Him. But what does it mean to know Him? So what we're going to do is we're going to go to Psalm 103, draw a principle from this text, and then seek to see this pattern in a few other biblical principles. So let's begin in Psalm 103, verse 1 of David. Bless the Lord. And I'm going to use Yahweh because those of us in the home study know this terminology. Bless Yahweh, O my soul, in all that is within me. Bless His holy name. Bless Yahweh, O my soul, and forget not all His benefits, who forgives all your iniquity, who heals all your diseases, who redeems your life from the pit, who crowns you with steadfast love and mercy, who satisfies you with good so that your youth is renewed like the eagles. Yahweh works righteousness and justice for all who are oppressed. He made known His ways to Moses, His works to the people of Israel. Here, David, in one of his clearest psalms, focuses on the acts and the nature of God. Particularly in Psalm 103, he focuses on the mercy and forgiving nature of God. But I want to look at the principle he gives in verse 7 in particular. He says in verse 7, God made known His ways to Moses, His works to the people of Israel. I would like to suggest that for us to come to know God, we first need to understand the distinction between knowing the works of God and knowing the ways of God. Moses knew the ways of God. Israel knew the works of God. What does it mean to know the works of God, and what does it mean to know the ways of God? So we're first going to look at this idea of knowing the works of God, and then we're going to proceed to investigate what does it really mean to know the ways of God. So here in this context, you'll note that David is using an analogy back to the time of Israel coming out from the Red Sea. He says in verse 7, He made known His ways to Moses, His works to the people of Israel. So during this time period of their leaving the Red Sea and going to Sinai, God made known His ways to Moses, but His works to Israel. What does it mean, first of all, to know the works of God? Go with me back to Exodus 34. Exodus chapter 34. I want us to understand how God made known His works to the children of Israel. It tells us in Exodus 34, verse 10, He said, Behold, I am making a covenant. Before all your people, I will do marvels, such as you have not been created in all the earth or in any nation. And the people among whom you shall see the work of the Lord, for it is an awesome thing that I will do with you. What here does God say? God is going to do marvels before these people, such as have not been created in the earth or in any nation. God is going to do marvels among his nation. They are going to see his work that has been clearly seen ever since creation itself. Israel will see the works of God. And all the people whom you shall see the work of the Lord Yahweh, for it is an awesome thing that I will do with you. They will know the works of God. They will see the marvels of God. They will see his work. What was that work? Go with me to Psalm 78. Psalm 78. Here the psalmist recounts for us in retrospect many of the works of God. Psalm 78. Let's pick up in verse 9. The Ephraimites, it was a nation that was kin to Israel, the Ephraimites armed with a bow turned back on the day of battle. They did not keep God's covenant, but refused to walk according to his law. Notice verse 11. They forgot his works and the wonders that he has shown them. In the sight of their fathers, he performed wonders. In the land of Egypt, in the fields of Zoan, he divided the sea and let them pass through it, and made the waters stand like a heap. In the daytime, he led them with a cloud, and all the night with a fiery light. He split rocks in the wilderness and gave them drink abundantly as from the deep. He made streams come out of the rock and cause waters to flow down like rivers. They saw the works of God. They had seen God do marvelous, amazing, miraculous things, but they forgot his works. The Ephraimites had forgotten his works, and because they forgot his works, they forgot his wonder, and because they forgot his wonder, they ceased following his law. They needed to remember and remind themselves of the works of God. Go with me a bit later in the chapter. We're going to pick up in verse 42. They did not remember God's power or the day when he redeemed them from the foe, when he performed his signs in Egypt and his marvels in the fields of Zoan. He turned their rivers to blood so that they could not drink of their streams. He sent among them swarms of flies which devoured them, and frogs which destroyed them. He gave their crops to the destroying locust and the fruit of their labor of the locust. He destroyed their vines with hail and their sycamores with frost. He gave over their cattle to the hail and their flocks to the thunderbolts. He set loose on them his burning anger, wrath, indignation, and distress, a company of destroying angels. He made a path for his anger. He did not spare them from death, but gave their lives over to the plague. He struck down every firstborn in Egypt, the firstfruits of their strength in the tents of Ham. Then he led out his people like sheep and guided them in the wilderness like a flock. He led them in safety so that they were not afraid. But the sea overwhelmed their enemies. And he brought them to his holy land, to the mountain which is his right hand had won. He drove out nations before them. He apportioned them for a possession and settled the tribes of Israel in their tents. They knew the works of God. And I would suggest for us to begin to know God, we must first know the works of God. And for those of us who were raised in Christian homes and went to Bible class from the time we were young, you start with the works of God, right? You start by teaching the plagues of Israel. You start by teaching the miracles of Jesus. You start by teaching the wonders of the prophets, by teaching God's works. But brethren, I'm afraid that we live in a nation that has woefully forgotten the works of God. I remember a few years ago, I was teaching a high school Bible class. And there was one young man who was in the class who I do not think had ever been in a church his entire life. He came from a family of drunks who had no desire at all to follow God, but because of a distant cousin had been brought to church. Most of the students in the class, they'd been raised in Christian homes. In this particular class, we were actually asking the question, who is God? And as we went around, as we did in our home Bible class, and got many different answers, some responded, you know, God is the Creator. God is the Father of Jesus. God is the Redeemer. When we got to this young man, I'll never forget his answer. God is some man in the sky. My God, who made my very flesh. My God, who parted the Red Sea. My God, who made a promise to Abraham that he fulfilled hundreds of years later. My God, who took the Amorites and drove them from the land so that he could take Joshua in. My God, who raised up judges to save his people. My God, who raised up holy kings and saved his nation and delivered them from enemies. My God, who punished his people when they went into wicked ways. My God, who brought them out from captivity. My God, who sent his only son to die on the cross. And my God, who gave apostles who inspiration of his word spoke forth his gospel message. My God is some guy in the sky. This young man needed to come to know the works of God. Every work that our God has done is wonderful and glorious. Every work that our God has done speaks to his power, speaks to his might, speaks to his majesty. While we may know the days of creation, we may even know a song about it. We may know the plagues of Israel. We may know the order of the judges. We may know the two different nations of kings. We may know the miracles of Jesus. We may know his parables. We may know the great work of the apostles and the sacrifice that they gave. Brethren, so many don't. We need to know the works of God. As I have tried to get us to see over this last year in various studies of the New Testament, the Bible is not primarily a story of man. The Bible is the story of God. And while there is much we can learn about historical fact from Scripture, the Old Testament especially paints for us the narrative of our God. We need to understand the works of God before we are ever to understand the ways of God. But that then recognizes there's more to God than his work. There's more to God than just what he has done. The works describe what God has done. The ways of God describe who God is. Who is God? Last week, while Jessica and I were on vacation with my family, I read a biography of Benjamin Franklin. I've always had a high interest. Joan's giving me a weird look. It's a great book, Joan. I've always loved the founding of this nation, the American Revolution, and the founding fathers. Always been my favorite part of American history. But I had never read a biography of Benjamin Franklin. My two favorite founders are Thomas Jefferson and Dr. Franklin, my two absolute favorites. Before I read this book, I knew many of the works of Dr. Franklin, as he was known. Dr. Franklin, of course, had served as Postmaster General of the United States. He was one of the most successful publishers of Pennsylvania of his time. He served as a diplomat to England for 15 years, later to France. He was one of the framers and signers of the Declaration of Independence. He was one of the framers of the United States Constitution, one of the framers of the Pennsylvania State Constitution. Apart from all of his scientific endeavors, he did not discover electricity. Electricity was far known before Dr. Franklin's discovery. What he actually discovered was lightning's electricity. And he was throughout his time known to be the one to tame the great wonder of electricity. His works were amazing. Amazing. What he had accomplished by the time he was my age far trumps anything I have ever done. By his works alone, he was, I think, 70 years old when he was sent as a diplomat from the Continental Congress to France. He was the most popular man in all of France, simply because of his works. He was more popular and more well-known than almost the King George, Voltaire, Rousseau, any of the other great figures of the day. Dr. Franklin was the most well-known because of his works. But here's what I recognized when I was reading the book. While most of his works I had known before, I knew most of those facts beforehand, I didn't know the ways of Dr. Franklin. I didn't know the ways of who he was. What motivated him? What made him tick? His personality, his temperament, his nature. That's the ways of an individual. For God, what are his ways? Psalm 103, verse 7. He made known his ways to Moses, his acts to the people of Israel. Israel knew, and they were familiar with, the works of God, but they did not understand the ways of God. Moses did. For us to come to understand the ways of God, I think we need to look to Moses' example. Let's go back to Exodus 33. Exodus chapter 33. This is a text where God here comes before Moses and shows him his ways. This is a bit lengthy of a reading. We're going to pick up in verse 12. Exodus 33, verse 12. Moses said to Yahweh, "See, you say to me, bring up this people, but you've not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet you have said, I know you by my name, and you've also found favor in my sight. Now therefore, if I have found favor in your sight, note with me, please now show me your ways, that I might know you, in order to find favor in your sight. Consider this too, my nation is your people." And God said, "My presence will go with you, and I will give you rest." He said to him, "If your presence will not go with me, do not bring us from here. For how shall it be known that I have found favor in your sight, I and your people? Is not this your going with us, so that we are distinct, I and your people, from every other people on the face of this earth?" And Yahweh said to Moses, "This very thing that you have spoken I will do, for you have found favor in my sight, and I know you by name." Moses said, "Please show me your glory." God said, "I will make known all my goodness and pass before you, and will proclaim before you my name, Yahweh. I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and will show mercy on whom I will show mercy." But he said, "You cannot see my face, for man shall not see me and live." And Yahweh said, "Behold, there is a place by me where you shall stand on the rock. And while my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will take my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen." Here Moses went to God and he said, "God, show me your ways. Make known your ways to me." God then says, "You can't take my ways, but I will show you my glory." And he took his hand and he covered it, and the greatness, the glory, the graciousness of God passed before Moses. In this context, understanding the ways of God meant understanding the greatness, the graciousness, and the overarching glory of God. Brethren, let me ask you, who is God? Is God great? Is he glorious? Is he loving? Is he angry? Is he merciful? Is he just? Is he kind? Is he of judgment? Is he slow to anger? All those things. Understanding the depths of the glory of God is a task that mankind will never be able to complete. And while in this life, and perhaps in eternity, we will ever only partly know and understand the glory of God, brethren, we must be intent on understanding the ways of God. To get to know somebody means you get to know what makes them tick. What I learned from reading about Dr. Franklin was perhaps better than any other word. He was gregarious, meaning that he was just a social, outgoing individual. I can just imagine if Dr. Franklin were to walk in this very room, he would have been the center of attention, the most interesting of men, loyal to the king, until finally his allegiance to England was too much for even him to bear. And he suddenly had to take himself over to the cause of the revolution and revolt against the king who he once had pledged undying allegiance to. Thomas Jefferson, on the other hand, he would have been the most boring person you ever would have met. Jefferson was a quiet, studious, almost stoic individual who, when he was 33 years old, wrote the Declaration of Independence. And as in the words of JFK, whenever he had invited a great crowd of intellectuals to the White House, such intellect has not been seen in the White House as when Thomas Jefferson dined alone. He was a brilliant man, one who was familiar with and knew back and forth the philosophy of the Enlightenment and even to an extent the Scripture. But that wasn't his ways. While both men were signers of the Declaration of Independence, their ways were much different. Their personalities, their temperaments, their motivations, and even their actions were much different. While they had a work in common, that of revolution and the signing of the Declaration and the independence of America, their ways were much different. Brethren, we cannot be satisfied with just knowing the works of God. We need to come to know and to understand the ways of God. Doing so, I can't do in 10 minutes. It's a task that takes a lifetime to begin and will take an eternity to finish. But as we come to know the works of God, the question we need to ask is, what do the works of God demonstrate about his nature? If I can illustrate it this way. For Dr. Franklin, signing the Declaration of Independence meant that he had to go against the king who he still wanted to pledge allegiance to. But because of the inhumane, unjust actions of Parliament, he had to go against his king. For Jefferson, it was a complete different motivation. It meant he was going to the simple Enlightenment philosophies and taking forth true liberty and freedom in a sense that the world had never known. Their action was the same, but what motivated them was different. What does creation show us about the nature and the ways of our God? What does the parting of the Red Sea show us about the nature of our God? What do the parables of Jesus show us about the ways of our God? What does the crucifixion itself show us about the nature of our God? As we come to understand and come to know the works of our God, we must always be considering and always be contemplating, what do these demonstrate to us about the ways of our God? Let us come to know and let us come to understand the ways of our God. Let's go to Psalm 86. In Psalm 86, here as David contemplates the ways of God, he says, verse 8, there is none like you among the gods, O Lord. Nor are there any works like yours. All the nations you have made shall come and worship before you, O Yahweh. O Adonai. And shall glorify your name. For you are great and do wondrous things. You alone are God. Here, before we continue, what does David recognize? Of all of the gods of this age, you are the God. Yours are the only true ways. Yours are the only right ways. You are God. Verse 11, teach me your way, O Yahweh, that I may walk in your truth. Unite my heart to fear your name. I give thanks to you, O Lord my God, with my whole heart, and I will glorify your name forever. For great is your steadfast love toward me, and you have delivered my soul from the depths of Sheol. As David considered the ways of God, and he considered the very nature of God, he then instructed and asked of God, teach me your way, O Yahweh, that I may walk in your truth. Unite my heart to fear your name. Brethren, the only way that we are truly going to know God is if we not only know his way, but we walk in his way. Why is it Jessica knows me better than any other person on this earth? Because we walk in the same way. Marriage has bound us together. My way is hers and her way is mine. We walk together. How will we come to know our God? We walk in his way. We live in his way. We walk in his truth. We obey his commands. We heed his word. And we walk in the righteous, enlightening way of our God. Then we will come to know him. Shall we continue on our own way? Shall we continue on the way of this world? We may understand and even hear of the works of God, but we will never begin to understand the ways of God. For us to understand our God, we must understand his works, which shows us his way, which should lead us to walking in his way, which will lead us to knowing him. That's our task. And that's the duty of man, to walk in and know the way of God. Psalm 103, verse 7. God made known his ways to Moses, his acts to the people of Israel. Why did that poor young boy who had never been to church in his life call our great, glorious God some guy in the sky? He understood neither the works nor the ways of God. Brethren, my admonition, let us learn, let us understand, and let us obey the way of God. That's how we know him. And that's how we then come to serve him. We know his way. Get out your songbooks, please. Do you know the ways of God? Throughout the next few months, what I would like to do is I would like for us to consider various qualities and aspects of the ways of God. I would like for us to consider, what is the nature of God? What's his temperament? What's his nature? What's his way? What are his ways? And as we then come to consider and know the ways of our God, we should hopefully continue to and proceed to walk in his ways. Perhaps there's someone here this very evening who wants to begin your walk with God. You want to begin following his holy way. You want to begin following in his path of righteousness and following in his way. Know the works of God. God gave his son so that you may live. God allowed his son to die on Calvary's cross so that we may live. Those are the works of God. But the greatest work of God of all time, the crucifixion, That single act demonstrates and reveals to us the love, the mercy, the righteousness, the anger, the kindness, and indeed the very forgiveness of our God. That is the God who we serve. And that is the one true living God. If you would like to render yourself in the waters of baptism to this holy God this very evening, come forward while we stand and while we sing.